thanks to our sponsor, AvePoint. If you like the Microsoft Cloud Show, you'll love the Shift Happens podcast with MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation project. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably rise when ambitious people try to impact their workspace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag #ShiftHappens. That's one word, #ShiftHappens. Wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 373, where today we're going to talk about Internet Explorer 11 and Legacy Edge on Death Row, learning pathways and more with Julie Turner, recorded live August the 20th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admins control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations, and a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit ShareGate.com/overcast_CS. Back to the show. Hello, everybody. This is Andrew. I was supposed to be flying solo this week as CJ is sitting, I think he's on the coast in Oregon or in Washington or somewhere, but he's off with his family on a little bit of R&R, and I'm supposed to fly solo, and I was like, no, we're going to upgrade the show. So I've asked somebody who's been on the show before, but a longtime friend, Julie Turner, has joined me to talk about a couple different things today. Before I introduce Julie or bring Julie on the show, I want to make sure everybody knows who Julie is. Julie has been building software for over 20 years with a degree in electrical engineering from Worcester Polytechnic Institute, where she quickly realized the love and aptitude for developing rich user experiences and solutions. Unfortunately, she then went into SharePoint. Since 2007, her focus has been on the SharePoint platform. Oops, shouldn't have put that in there. Office 365, Azure, and client-side development. She's the co-author of the Widget Wrangler JavaScript Library and is the development lead for the Microsoft 365 Learning Pathways. She's held the Microsoft MVP Award for Office Apps and Services since 2017 and is a core member of the Microsoft 365 PMP team. Julie, welcome back to the Microsoft Cloud Show.
Hey, thanks for having me, AC. Nice to be here.
It is so nice to have an upgrade on the co-host today.
I was going to say, you know, it's just, you only have CJ for his accent. We know how it is.
It is. I mean, it's the token, you know, we have to have, like, you know, have some diversity on there and stuff. So it is nice to have the accent there. But it's nice to have a little bit of an upgrade. So.
I'm sure you're going to miss him. But happy to be here.
No, not really. So. Just kidding. He won't even know
CJ,
that we said that though until he's back. Totally do. But no, I wanted to bring you on the show. I was trying to think, like, you know, I want to get somebody else to kind of co-host the show with me. And I was like, first person I thought of, like, let me get Julie to come back.
Thanks.
And we were like, well, what are we going to talk about today? And what do we do is we come to find out that we had one or two topics that we were going to talk about, and then something just fell in our lap. And I almost feel bad that we've taken this news item from CJ, but yeah, I know you and I have really experienced the pain of this, and so it's pretty appropriate.
Yeah, super appropriate. Yeah. I think we both threw sort of a mini party when it happened. I certainly raised a glass of my favorite adult beverage in cheers for the death. I believe the meme I used was the bye. You know, like just... Can't be gone soon enough. When is this happening? Just make it happen.
It was great. It was great. But I tell you what, before we dive into that news, something I usually do with CJ on the show is kind of ask him, you know, hey, what you've been up to lately? Now, you've been on the show a couple times. If I'm not mistaken, I think I interviewed you and your colleague, Mark Anderson. I think it was at Ignite. Last September, where we talked about Project Cortex.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so if I ask you, so what have you been up to? This might take a little bit of time. So how about I modify what I normally ask everybody and say, so
what's new in your life like lately?
How's COVID going? Is pretty much the question you ask everyone, right? It's like, how's COVID?
Yeah. So how's this, like, how is your family? How is your work, you know, dealing with the whole COVID and the pandemic? And what's going as you're, I know you've got a young son, so school's starting up. Yep. So like, well, how's it going?
It's been interesting because I'm in New Hampshire, which is, you know, one of the New England states, and we kind of did pretty well. I mean, New Hampshire itself, Maine, where my immediate family lives, I have a brother and my mom and dad. So my brother and his family and my mom and dad are in Lewiston Auburn area of Maine, which is only about an hour and a half from us. So those are people that we see normally. And the pandemic has really been managed quite well by these two states. You know, Massachusetts was pretty bad. I'm very close to the border of Massachusetts, but it really didn't cross into New Hampshire too bad. And we're on a little bit of a strip of county that has almost no cases. So my area right here, every town in this area here has less than four cases or to zero. And so we've been really lucky, like knock on wood. We started this off by going to the grocery store like once every 2 weeks, and my husband would be the person to go. I have asthma. So we were a little bit, before we knew too much, we were a little bit more worried about me being outside. So I didn't even leave the house for 9 weeks, like didn't go anywhere. And my husband did the grocery shopping once every 2 weeks, which was super interesting. Yeah, we just managed it. Yeah, it's like, oh God, really? We're literally on day 10 and it's like, there's nothing here. Can't you just go now? And he stuck to his guns. And so it was tough at first, and he had gotten laid off last November, and so he wasn't working. And when they took, you know, when the schools closed down and everything, God bless him. God bless him, because I would have murdered myself if I had to homeschool our 7-year-old, who's like a whirling dervish. Like, we don't even go on normal vacations because he's too crazy. You can't go to a city. You have to go somewhere where he can be active for like 6 hours straight, or he's intolerable. So it was tough. It was really tough. And we thought we were going back to school, and the whole plan was in, and they were going to do this alternate day thing and whatever. And then they decided to scrap the whole thing, and we're remote only starting up again, but not until early September. So we have a few weeks left at home, but luckily, So luckily we've been going up to my parents, and you know, the whole family like congregates at my parents, and he has cousins that are the same age as him. So he's had a few kids to play with, but he's an only child. This is really tough on him. He's doing a lot more screen time than, you know, we should ever allow as parents, but it's what, you know, it's what it is. We're just making it happen. So that's my life. But for me personally, I work at home. I have worked at home for the last like 10 years. So this is,
I've been training for this my whole life.
Right. It doesn't bother me. Not at all from that perspective, but
How has it affected like work? I mean, I'm not trying to get any specifics here to get you to share anything.
It was a huge pickup at the beginning. Yeah, we had a lot of people who were accelerating their migrations to Office 365. You know, we have Mark and Emily Mancini and Derek and Mike Gilronen. That group of people really helped support people kind of, you know, with their information architecture and their migrations and all that. And Todd does the technical side of migrations. I do Todd mostly Clint, just yep. development. Yep, Todd Clint, sorry. Mm-hmm. And so it really picked up, and it really hasn't slowed down tremendously, although, you know, it's leveled out a little bit, but it really picked up right at the beginning. Lots more people trying to get there faster to support the remote workers.
There's a lot of aspects of this whole pandemic that have been fascinating, interesting, you know, however you want to look at it. To me, one of them is to see the businesses that are impacted in a positive way and see the businesses that are impacted in a negative way. And it's just, it's things, so many things that you just don't, that you would not have anticipated. Like, for example, my cousin, my cousin's family, and now my cousin, like my age cousin, my aunt and uncle started the business, but now my cousin and his wife run it. I guess it's an outdoors store. It's all retail. And in the past, it's been like skateboarding type stuff, Boy Scout, like outfitting type stuff, outdoor wear activity stuff. In the last couple of years, they've moved more towards doing outdoor water sports and mostly things like those Hobie, like fishing kayak type stuff or stand up paddle boards. The business originated as a windsurfing store. And it's funny, as you talk to them, you can just tell they are so slammed because of people that are getting out. Like right now, one of the best things you can do, or one of the best activities you can do, is to socially isolate, is going out on the water, going to the beach and going out in the water and doing stuff. Because you can't be, you get a kayak, you're not right on top of the next person next to you. If you are, it's kind of like, you know, get your boat away from me. But hearing them, just like how busy they are. They've got this big warehouse where they usually store all their boats. They can't keep it full. Starting to have a hard time getting boats in because people are just buying them left and right. So,
well, that's certainly bikes for us. Bikes in New England, unfindable. Cannot get a bike.
I would have expected retail to be one of the hardest hit. I mean, aside from hospitality, but retail to be one of the hardest hit. And some retail, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. But some retail is just thriving right now. And it's just, it's interesting. We're like you said, you know, you're talking about with school. We started school this week. I have a 10th grader and a 6th grader. And we pulled them out of brick and mortar school. Unlike New Hampshire, Florida doesn't really have things under control.
Yeah. Right?
Things are getting better, but we don't have a lot of confidence. So we pulled our kids out. They're in virtual school. And it's nice the way it's set up is that in Florida, we have a virtual school offering. And it's treated just like a normal school. It's just like you move to a different county. It's like a virtual county you move to. And so they have teachers are all over the state, but it's treated just like, you know, a plus one on a county. 100% virtual. You never go in person with anybody. And both my daughter and my son started up this week. Classic, you know, first day issues that normally would be fixed at a brick and mortar school where you're just like, I don't know where I'm going. It's like, well, I'm going to just go follow the crowd and just kind of go that direction. But when your son can't get in, yesterday's biggest lesson was, let me show you how to work the help desk and how to get your login set up. And if you don't get a response from the help desk with a certain amount of time, then you call with your help desk ticket before they tell you, have you opened a ticket? I was like, well,
real world experience. This is excellent. I can't knock that. That's the world, man. Help desk.
Second thing you do is you email your teacher. I mean, 2-3 minutes after class starts, you've been trying for 10 minutes to get in, email your teacher. She's not going to see it right away. I get that she's teaching, but she will at least know that you are trying to get in. I said, look, he's like, they're going to know it's okay. And I'm like, you're a straight A student, but this is the first time you're doing this. The first time you're going with these teachers, they have no idea you're a straight A student. You want to just show that I'm making an effort to get in. I can't get in. I'm trying to get into the live class. Thankfully, ended up a whole like slew of people were having trouble getting in because they were in the middle of loading some more courses in the system. And if your course was being loaded, your login didn't work. So it was a good thing. He's like, man, there's tons of people that can't get in. And I was like, that's a good problem. As a developer, that's a good problem. Because if you know nobody can get in, if some people can get in, then it's like, wait a minute, why can't... So it's
That's a really hard thing to fix. Yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for me. I hate that.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't work on my machine.
Unless you can repo it. Yeah. Unless you can reproduce it, it's not a bug. That's what Mike Gilarona does project management with me on a project. And he's like, I'm not even going to tell you because I can't repro it yet. I'm like, exactly. Don't even talk to me. Talk to the hand until you can repro it. Otherwise, I don't want to hear.
I spent the whole morning working on the backlog of the SP DevDocs issue list and multiple responses of just like, can you repro it? Because just saying that here's the error that I'm getting. I'm like, what are you doing and where are you? Like, it doesn't help me, man. If you don't give me that stuff, there's nothing I can do with it. So,
I love that the PNP is doing GitHub, like sharing is caring. David Warner and Hugo Bernier, I don't want to mispronounce his name, but I think I just hashed the heck out of him.
I was going to let you do it because I didn't know I would do it.
Oh, sorry, Hugo. We love you. Anyway, they're doing the sharing and caring videos to help people get started on doing, you know, because just because you're an experienced developer doesn't mean you've ever done open source and doesn't necessarily mean you know how to use GitHub to do pull requests and, you know, work with others and merge and fork a repo and all that stuff. It's a little bit intimidating. So they've been doing these sessions, and I think it's awesome, teaching people how to enter issue tickets. It's like, it could be a whole court. Andrew, I got a new course for you. How to enter an issue in the GitHub and put all the details that people need to help you. I want to help you. I want to. But you got to fill it out.
I have adopted in the SP DevDocs issue list, I have pushed for, and not just me, but I've gotten Microsoft to adopt the, if you don't give us enough info, the best way to let you know that we don't, that you have not given us enough info is just to be the artificial, you're getting tagged with incomplete submission with a little post that goes in with a link of how to create a good issue. And we're not going to answer. Cool. So it just kind of shuts you down right away. So
I think
anyway,
we need that for PMPJS.
It helps immediately. What it does is it closes the issue that they submitted and it locks it. So they've got to create a brand new issue. They can't respond. They can't get all ticked off or anything. You can still get to the issues. They can copy and paste the stuff back in there. But it's like, if you delete, we have a form that they go to fill out. And if they delete everything from the form and just say, this doesn't work, I'm like, neither does your issue. Close.
Yeah, yeah, so, exactly.
Anyway. Exactly. So aside from school starting this week, hopefully by the time this podcast goes live, the big thing that I'm excited about is I'm planning to launch starting tomorrow. So by the time the site goes live, hopefully it's long done, my new company website. So Voitanos is getting a complete facelift. I'm taking the site. So when I launched the business a little over 3 years ago, I decided that I wanted to focus on the content. And so I picked a platform that I didn't have to do any coding for. It was very much like pretty much a paint by numbers type thing. But like any web developer, you lose a lot of control when you do something like that. And whenever you want to make an update, there's a whole ton of manual stuff you got to do. There's not like a mass change you can do. So it's really frustrating. So what we've done is I've split the site into two sites. There's the site that's still membership and like courses. So if you're a customer, you've purchased something or you're going to purchase something, that's all still on the old site. But the new site, like voitanos.io, is going to be all hosted as a static site. It's blazing fast. I actually have search on it. Makes it easier to publish blog posts and stuff. There's so much stuff. It's a much cleaner, much better experience. But it will, like, and eventually I'll be able to get to maybe totally change up the way that the management of the site, the current theme works of the, like where the course is and everything. But this is the main thing, was like a first piece was like, we threw the site together and it could only like provide for one product. And problem is that I plan on building another course after this. And I'm like, so what do I do? Redo the website and then do the course, or do I do the course and then hold on to the course and then do the website? And like, you know what?
Yeah,
let's get the website done.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's exciting.
Yeah, so, yes, it is exciting.
I can't believe it's been 3 years.
I know. September 2017.
Wow.
September 17th, 2017 is when the course went on for sale. Awesome. Went up for sale. Early 2017 is when I first started the email course and the free video course. But
yeah, I remember it really well. I'm just like, wow, 3 years, really? Yeah, I guess it has. Cool. That's awesome. Yeah. I'm excited for you, man.
I shouldn't have taken this long to get the site done, get the course done, but
well,
it's done.
That's a different conversation.
Exactly.
Life happens.
So I wanted to bring you on the show because I wanted to talk about some interesting stuff, both what you're doing and then something that is important to the two of us. So let's go ahead and dive into that.
Okay. Sounds great.
This episode is sponsored by Raygun. Raygun provides full stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers due to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time that you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your code base, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experience of your users. This podcast is brought to you by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, wouldn't you take it? Because our friends at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities and most recently a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products that you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it how you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at nintex.com. And now, back to the show.
Okay, Julie, big news hit earlier this week on August the 17th. Let me put it to you the way that I see it, and then I'll say what Microsoft said, and I get your reaction from it. So Microsoft announced on August the 17th that Internet Explorer and Legacy Edge, and IE11 are on death row. Now, officially what they said was that in about a year, by this time next year, Internet Explorer 11 and Legacy Edge are both going to be no new updates. They're not going to be supported. And what the probably the biggest thing is that Microsoft is dropping support for those browsers on things like the web client and Teams, on Outlook.com, on Microsoft 365 resources, on SharePoint Online, everywhere they're dropping support, joining places like the G Suite, Google Suite, Salesforce, GitHub hasn't supported it forever, for a while. Stack Overflow hasn't supported Internet Explorer for a while. And so it's so nice to see that they finally have just said, you know what? You're going out the pasture. I say it's death row because now you've got 1 year to know that it is dead. What do you think?
I'm so excited. I wanted to throw a party. You remember how they had that like funeral for InfoPath? Mm-hmm. I didn't even want the funeral. Like, let's just skip to the party. Like, what a great life. Not. Let's just move on. Yes. Freaking hate IE. There's nothing. There's not even going to be a gravestone. Like, we just don't even care. You're dead to me. You've been dead to me. It's the bane of my existence is sort of what I said on Twitter because, you know, big organizations that have legacy apps or whatever it is that they have where they feel they need to have Internet Explorer, then of course, everything, all the customizations you do against Microsoft 365 have to support IE. And it's like, I've literally started adding surcharges to my development time. And by that, I just mean like, and as I break out my price plan for how much time it's going to take me to build this, I'm going to add a huge chunk, a bucket, and I'm going to even label it support for IE11 because it's going to take me forever. Because as I said to you, it's like debugging with blindfolds on and one arm tied behind your back. It's just horrible. So it couldn't have died soon enough. It should have died a while ago. It's just, I'm so happy.
Seen so many little things over the years of things of Microsoft saying, well, you know, like for SharePoint Framework, IE11 is not supported in the local workbench. And there's other little things that are like that, that aren't supported in IE11. But it wasn't until that they finally were, that's the thing I've been begging for, please just drop support for it on M365, your productivity suite. Once you drop support for it, that'll go a very long way. Now, one thing that for people who are listening to this and going, God, you guys, you don't really get it. You know, that people, so many companies still have this as like, as their standard browser.
I know.
I'm like, you know what? I'm happy to give you my 2 cents on this one. Here's the thing.
Really? You have an opinion? You're kidding.
Oh my God. Yeah. On this one. Yeah. And this was a strong opinion. The thing that's frustrating to me about this is that everybody's like, you know, we have to, it's a corporate standard. It's a corporate standard. I'm like going, your policy does not need to dictate the way the rest of us are doing. Yes. I understand you may have some legacy apps that require Internet Explorer to be able to work that don't work inside Chrome. That's fine. But these other products don't have to support it just because you have to use that one browser. And oh yeah, by the way, if you want to continue or you have to continue to use Internet Explorer, you can use it for that one product. You can have that be the exception. But if it was something that was going to cost you money, as in going to buy a new version of Edge to install on your Windows 10 machine, or buy and install Chrome, or buy and install Firefox, or whatever you end up wanting to use, if you had to go through and spend money for this, that'd be one thing. All of these browsers are free. And you can go grab one, install it, and treat that as your standard browser or your default browser, your browser spec, and then continue to use IE, Internet Explorer, if you need to use it for a specific product. Edge has the ability to have an IE11 or IE special mode inside of it.
Yeah, that even makes it easier. There's less of an excuse. I hate to be too mean about this, but I've been a director of IT. I had that role. I understand what it is to manage a bunch of desktops and, you know, the rollout, not at a huge scale. It was a small organization, but still, it's laziness on the part of IT. You're not willing to spend the time and effort to come up with a better desktop plan for your users and help educate them, communicate to them, and put them in a position to be successful. Because you're absolutely freaking right. You can have more than one browser installed on your desktop. Guess what? That's how it works. You get to have more than one. So this whole like, oh, well, it's our in our desktop, it's our standard or your whatever, is just a lazy excuse, in my opinion. I'm just going to be harsh about it. It's laziness. It's identify the apps that you have that must have IE, put a life plan to upgrade those things in place, and where you can't do it, you create a communication plan, triage your users that need to use that app, you get the default browser on the desktop upgraded to something that works for that's modern, and you get a plan in place and you start doing this. And given how old IE 11 is, give me a freaking break. You had years to do this. This has been painful for years.
2013, I think, is when it was released. September,
I maybe need to chill a little. I just got
it's so annoying. So funny, I didn't even see this news come out. I've been so like heads down working on stuff this week, getting, you know, helping get kids ready for school this week and focusing on our internal projects and stuff. I completely missed this and somehow just, I, you know, popped up for air, looked at social media, looked at Facebook, looked at Twitter, opened up Teams for the first time in like 3 or 4 days. And I started to see a couple little posts about this. I'm like, this is like 4 or 5 Christmases wrapped into one for me. I mean, this is, I almost started crying. Like, oh my God, it's happening. It's actually happening. This is going to die. So I'm thrilled. I'm curious to see, I wish somebody would do a blog post and would look at certain packages and sites and say, what have they been able to remove and how much of a payload in a site and our projects are going to go down because all of these stupid if statements and conditions that we've had to, put in stuff, what kind of like just cruft and just be deleted once you lose
I definitely think that's going to be part of it. But in my personal experience, I just did a rollout of some new stuff, revamp of a SharePoint framework app customizer for a client. And we were going to roll out and had not realized that they had an IE 11 requirement because it was a certain subset of people. We didn't understand that. Like everybody's using Chrome. Oh, wait, except for this one big area. And guess what? That happens to be where the executives are. So it's got to work on IE. I'm like,
except
whoa,
for Marshall's
whoa.
Department.
Yeah, right, exactly. Time out. We ended up adding 2 weeks to our rollout deployment because we had to go back. I had to do all that debugging. Stefan Bauer, who's a friend of ours, had to go back and fix all the CSS issues with it. And then we had to go through a whole nother round of testing because, you know, user experience testing, because we never did it, and just to make sure it worked. And so 2 weeks of at like 4 or 5 people, that's like a crap load of money. Like that's just like, let me throw money in the fireplace. Like, wasn't it screwed as the burns, the logs of money? Like that's what it felt like. I'm like, you want to throw another log of money on the fire? Go for it.
It's such great news. It's such great news. So, I mean, for those of you who are, you know, sad about losing Internet Explorer, you don't have any of my sympathy and I'm sorry, but the world's going to keep moving forward. We're going to get stuck in a pandemic, but we are going to move forward beyond
IE. Right, yeah. Thank God. So,
you have been involved in something else. You've been pretty significantly involved in this other thing called learning pathways. And I know a little bit about it. I don't know a ton about it, but I know some stuff about it. I should know more because I'm involved with the Patterns and Practices group and I keep hearing learning pathways up there. But, I also very much have had to approach so many of our peers, and not just our peers, but people out there, they try and keep track of like everything. And I finally, a couple of years ago, was like going, you know what? I'm done. I declare like capacity bankruptcy. I'm like, you know what? I'm focusing on the stuff that needs to stay inside my realm of influence. And so if something's going on, I'm like, I know that that's over there and I know who to go talk to about that's over there.
Right.
But right now I don't need to focus on that, but I know who to talk to and that's where you're on the show. And so tell us a little bit about what is learning pathways.
So it started as a Microsoft initiative to help get end user training in the hands of users. So by that, I mean like Office apps and SharePoint and Teams and, you know, all of that kind of learning that was available on like support.office.com or docs.microsoft.com. You know, I had training articles, training videos. There's a whole team of writers that produce this content, but there's no real good delivery mechanism for that content to get to your users. And so I don't know who had the brilliant idea inside of Microsoft. I can't speak to that, but I, through our network chain, ended up coming to me as somebody who knew how to work with the SharePoint framework, because the platform of choice for delivery, they thought, would be SharePoint, which actually makes sense. I mean, it's an intranet, you know, you can deliver learning to your users through that intranet. Everybody that at least with a certain level of license has access to SharePoint. So we just needed a delivery mechanism. Mm-hmm. And so I got involved fairly early. They had somebody prototype something and it was done really, really, really badly because they didn't understand the SharePoint framework. So I got involved and sort of re-architected it and came up with a way of doing it that was like an early idea. And then I realized quickly that we had no user experience design or styling capacity. And so I dragged Stefan Bauer into it. Because I'm like, I need a designer and I need somebody who really gets this stuff like deeply. And so I dragged him into it. And so then the two of us sort of embarked on architecting and designing learning pathways. And so the concept behind it is a SharePoint framework web part that, for lack of a better way to say it, iframes in content from support.office.com in playlists. So Microsoft curates playlists for different products, different scenarios, like, you know, the modern workplace or products like Teams or SharePoint or Outlook or whatever it might be. And they curate a set of playlists, and every quarter they update those playlists with new playlists and new content, new products, and all the content is just curating together those articles on support.office.com or docs.microsoft.com together into playlists so that they can be consumed. And so the idea behind the Learning Pathways web part is that it reads these files, and the way we did this, because we were on a shoestring budget with a value of zero, was that came up with the idea to host the playlist content in JSON files and host them through GitHub Pages. So we take the JSON files that contain the objects that define what these playlists are with URLs that link it in and put those on GitHub Pages. And then you install the web part into your tenant, and the web part knows where the JSON files sit. It reads them in. I did some elaborate work on caching to try to make the thing as fast as possible. We created an admin web part that allows an administrator to go in and curate what should be shown to their users, right? Because maybe you don't use Teams in your organization and you don't want Teams learning content to be shown to people or whatever it might be. You want to curate it in some way. So it allows them to go in and customize playlists, hide certain topics, hide certain technologies, and then go one better and allows you to create your own playlist. And each item in a playlist is, we call, an asset. And you can mix Microsoft assets with your own assets. So you can create a SharePoint page where you put anything you want on that page, and you can mix and match it in with the content from support.office.com or Docs and make your own playlists that are curated very specifically for you. Or you can make your own playlists all up, like, hey, I want to have a whole section on training for my WYSIWYG app. And you can make all that training and put it in this admin section. And then you put that web part anywhere you want, on any site collection, in your tenant. You can put the web part and you can configure it down so it only shows a playlist, or it shows a category or a set of playlists or whatever. So there's a lot of functionality there. And as of July, we released version 4. And version 4 included multilingual support. So we're supporting 9 languages now, so that the content, the titles and descriptions and all that can be curated and managed in all of those languages, and that the content on support is already translated into all those languages, including, you know, the videos and all that kind of stuff. So you're getting this multilingual experience as well. And we also extended it so that you can, if you choose to, build your own what we call content packs. And the content pack is just that you create your own set of JSON files that match the structure of the playlist that we already create. And you can then have a CDN endpoint, which you can have your own GitHub pages. You can use GitHub pages. Again, I've been referring to that as CDN Lite because it's not really a CDN, but it kind of works that way. Or you can put the JSON files in Azure CDN, or you could host them on a web server inside your org or whatever you want to do. And then you add a content pack to Learning Pathways admin area, and you can point to your own content pack. So you can have then whatever you want, your own categories, whatever. And then the web part can be configured to point to any of the content packs you have. So it's a pretty interesting solution. It was an effort of love. I'm certainly deep into the coding and kind of married to it at this point. You know, it's my baby, my little child. But it's been fun. It's been a wicked good learning experience. And
no pun intended with the learning experience for Learning Pathways.
Yeah, exactly. And I've had a really good time working on it. It's been really excellent.
That was a hell of a comprehensive explanation, because I'm coming up with like 3 or 4 questions as you're talking. You answered all of them.
I've given so many talks in this, at this point I could give one in my sleep, I think, probably. But yeah.
If somebody wanted to add this to their tenant, like how do they go about doing that? Or how do they learn more about this?
Two ways to do that. So I'm sure you're familiar with or have heard of the lookbook. So you're going to post the link to the lookbook in the show notes. So I'm not going to try to mangle the URL, but you go to the Microsoft's lookbook site, and it's one of the solutions. So under the menu, there's solutions, and Microsoft 365 Learning Pathways is in there. So you can provision it that way. If you are not okay with using the lookbook site, like your organization doesn't want to trust the cert, or you have some issue with that, or you want a multilingual instance of it and your default language is not English, you're going to want to do the manual installation, which can also be done. And to do that, you just go to our GitHub repo, and there's a nice readme that explains all how to do it manually, which is just basically uploading the SharePoint framework solution into your tenant app catalog and running some PowerShell. So either way.
So that's not bad. That's pretty simple.
No, it's pretty simple. Pretty simple.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. What's the adoption been like? You got a lot of people using it now, or?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been huge.
There were some big eyes.
Yeah. It was kind of shocking because of the PMP team or whatever. Vesa Juvenen will do numbers about how, you know, what solutions in the lookbook have been utilized. And he teases me. He's like, oh, Julie's still in the lead by, you know, several thousand. So yeah, we've really had some good adoption. We had lots of great feedback. People are really excited and happy about it. And just super excited to have this content and that they can customize it. And I think that's the biggest part, because, you know, if you have a 6 simple steps to getting started on your organization, you know, with Office 365, well, that's wonderful. But what if step 2 really needs to be this custom thing you do in your organization, right? So that you can do that. And then your training department or your HR department could have onboarding playlists, like all sorts of really interesting scenarios. So
that was one of the questions I was going to have for you, was like, how, if I wanted to be able to add in my own content, my own learning for my organization, even if it's not like end user stuff or SharePoint, but if I had some other process, if I had like a whole bunch of content written about how to do a rollout of a website, I don't know, something like that, right?
Yep.
Just because that's top of mind for me right now. And I've got my list is getting longer and getting moved around, and I'm terrified to miss something.
To that point, though, like you do a lot of, I just know this because we're friends or whatever, but you'll make like videos for the people that help you. Like, here's how to do this thing. And you'll build a video because that makes sense for you. It's something you do all the time. You can use like Stream and embed a Stream web part on a web page with a video on how to do something with some content below it, and then create a playlist out of a bunch of pages that step through that process. Absolutely can do that. So anything you can put on a SharePoint page, you can make an asset in a playlist.
So you said that you had the ability to create like manual or custom content packs in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I'm correct, you mentioned that you could load these like dynamically from like, say, GitHub pages or just from a remote CDN. Is this also stuff that you could provide, that customers could bring inside if they're like, they don't have external access to GitHub or something, and they could like load it into their own system, their own SharePoint environment?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah, you could do that. There's a little bit of a caveat, right? Because if you're on-prem, mm-hmm. you're talking 2019 and we're running on the SharePoint Framework 1.10. So,
oh, man, how nice is that?
Yeah. So
like, I'm only doing SharePoint Online.
Yeah. So we're really only supporting SharePoint Online. It's really not a 2019 or a 2016. But to that point, I have clients, or I know of clients, who block all sorts of stuff from Office 365. Like, they let in very specific things, and GitHub is sometimes not one of them. And so they'll be like, the learning pathways doesn't work in my environment. And I'm like, well, you're blocking GitHub. So if you can't get to GitHub, you can't load the content.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. I'm not, no security judgment here, whatever. I mean, well, I have lots of judgments, but I'm not going to make them public. You know, whatever, you do what you want to do. But if that's really, and actually this is an issue for the GOC tenants, mm-hmm. like they have this issue. You can fork our repo, get the JSON files, and you can host them internally and then whitelist that URL and put it in Learning Pathways. So you could totally do that, even in your SharePoint Online, but say, instead of going to GitHub, I'm going to host these JSON files in some place that I'm comfortable enough to trust as a source. Yeah.
If someone created their own help content and they made it available for everybody, mm-hmm. I may want to show that, make that available inside my organization, but I would like to make sure there's eyes on that we review it before they go make updates and all of a sudden those updates are being shown to my organization.
Yes, and I've had people ask me that. Yes, yeah, yes, absolutely a scenario here where you could, if you're not happy with like some of the labels we put on thing, and I say we, but I mean like the Microsoft content, if you're not happy with the way we describe certain technologies, the audience labels we put on something, if you're willing to manage it, you can fork the repo, put those JSON files anywhere else that you want to, edit them till your heart's content, as long as they maintain the structure that we need for the app to work. And you can curate them that way. And thereby, when there's a content update, you know, you get notified from GitHub that there was an update to the content. You go, you know, grab the files, maybe put it in a staging environment, check it out, see what you want to keep, see what you don't want to keep, and merge the two things together. It's some manual work, but you can absolutely do it.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, congratulations on all that work and the adoption. That's always feels good to build something and seeing thousands of people using it.
Yeah, it's a little weird and surreal, I have to admit.
It is, and it's like, it's nice. It makes you feel good when you see that many people using it, because it's like, okay, if there was a problem, I would have heard about it by now. So this is nice to see.
Right.
I'm terrified. And when I roll something out, I'm always terrified of like, is it like, I can't wait to roll our website out and then just watch Google Analytics and see like, all right, what's the live hit on the people on the site? People on the site? Yeah. Okay. People still watching their course videos? I'm like, yeah. I want to see that first two or three sales come in. Like, okay.
The day I roll out a new major version and it has to do the upgrade because the JSON structure might have changed. Our major versions, when we do a major version, it's because the JSON structure has changed. And that rollout is so scary to me. And I sit and watch the GitHub issues list and I'm like, please God, please God, please God. No huge issues.
Do you have, and I know that there's, you know, there's a whole like privacy thing and stuff, big concerns. I can see your answer going in two very different directions from this. Neither one of them is right or wrong. I'm just curious. Do you guys do any like telemetry or analytics on like, on how it's being used?
Awesome question. And actually we're very good about that. We do telemetry. It is obfuscated quite significantly. So the only thing that's getting collected when we do the telemetry is your tenant ID. And we do a per user like tracking, like how many users you're using. But what we do is a SHA-encryption, SHA-256 encryption of the user name. And we use that as the thing that is the unique identifier. So we're not tracking anything about your users at all. The only thing that's coming through is your tenant ID and use it like unique users to the thing. However, that all said, it's a tenant app property that I use to decide whether telemetry is on or not. It's by default on, but we specify right in there, like if you don't want us tracking any telemetry at all, you can change this tenant app property using this little chunk of PowerShell and it'll turn it off and we won't track anything.
Got it. That makes sense.
Yep.
Cool.
Although it is the Microsoft platform and Microsoft tracks what you do. So it's less than actually what Microsoft tracks you doing on a page.
Yeah, I was more curious. It was not so much of the user tracking. I was more curious of like what is there anything that you're doing to kind of see how people are using the application and that kind of a thing? Like what kind of activity
we've had conversations about it. And one of the conversations we had was, you know, a lot of people want to kind of have, we're not an LMS. I want to just make that super clear. This is not an LMS system, but some people want some telemetry like, hey, are our users in our org viewing this playlist more or that playlist more? Are they coming back to this particular asset over and over again? That might tell us something, right? Mm-hmm. And so we've been discussing the idea of putting hooks in, so ways that you could configure like RESTful endpoints, let's say, that would get called when those particular events happened to give you some metadata about that event happening. So we've been discussing that idea, but it's still in its very infancy of, you know, solutions. So we don't really have, but Microsoft isn't particularly tracking that. They just need to track that there's how many tenants are using it, how many, they call it MAU, monthly active users. They want to know that because that helps them decide, hey, this is really, people really like this. We should invest more money in it. Or this isn't really getting used and people don't really care. And so we should maybe just drop it. I mean, so please don't turn telemetry off because we're really not tracking much about you. And the more MAU we get, the more money we get. Like that's really the answer, you know?
To fund the project.
Cool. That's what I mean. Because, you know, so, the execs are like looking at it and they're like, hey, look at all these people. This is a great project. We need to fund this.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there's things that you could, there are different places you could go with it and add new features and stuff like that. So
exactly. Lots of things we could do.
So if someone was curious about learning more about this, we're going to have links to it in the show notes. I got links to the lookbook. I've got a link to up on docs.microsoft.com talking about learning pathways as well as the project main repo in GitHub. Is there another place that you would point them to if people have questions or so, maybe like tomorrow?
Wow, you are so good at segues. So when this pandemic thing happened, one of the big tenets of Simpraxis Consulting is that we love to do community work. You know, Mark Anderson's been a community, active community member for a lot of years. When I joined him, I definitely got super active in the community. Todd Clint is super active in the community. And the rest of the Simpraxis crew, Derek, Emily, and Mike are all really active in the community. So we sort of felt, I'm going to use the term bereft, like we weren't going to conferences anymore. We weren't running our user groups the same way. None of that was happening. And we kind of, you know, after that first month, we looked at each other and we're like, we got to do something. This just feels like not okay. And decided to start Ask Simpraxis, which is a bi-weekly, just a half an hour video like meeting, that we'll call it, where people can come join in. We'll have a different topic every 2 weeks and they can just join in and ask questions. And it's just a really open, easy conversation. We really want people to like come off mute and ask their questions on whatever topic that we're discussing. Michael Ronan is probably one of the best moderators I've ever worked with. He is so excellent at it. Like he listens and he writes questions and then he poses questions back to the group. It's like, thank you for just making this so seamless to go smoothly. Anyway, he moderates the group and it's just a really wonderful quick half hour, sort of the idea of like a lunch and learn. And we just pick a new topic and we have a way for people to submit questions ahead of time so we can, you know, address those. And we try to seed it with a new topic every week. So ironically, tomorrow, and this is totally coincidental, tomorrow's topic is on Microsoft 365 Learning Pathways. So,
oh, there you go.
If anybody hears this and wants to come and join us, you're going to include a link in the show notes so they can find the Ask Simpraxis link for the Teams meeting and join us. But highly encourage you to come and ask questions because that's better than us just chatting and nobody interacting with us.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's good. So it's on August the 26th, which is the day after this show comes out, Wednesday the 26th. And it's simpraxisconsulting.com/portfolio/ask-simpraxis.
Yes.
Go there or just come to the show notes, both for this episode on our website, or if you're on our mailing list, it will be in your email on Wednesday morning.
You can follow Simpraxis C, the Twitter account, and we tweet the link all the time. And we will definitely be tweeting in the morning. So if you follow at Simpraxis C on Twitter, you'll find us there too.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for sharing learning pathways with our listeners.
Ooh, that's awesome. I'm glad you asked about it.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show.
Okay, Julie, we do something on the show. I know that you've been on the show a couple times, and I know you listened to it a little bit. I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you how much you listen to it, but that's okay. I don't listen to many podcasts these days either. So
I was just going to say more than I used to.
Yeah, I don't listen to them as much as I used to because it's like I don't have the any kind of a commuting or like, anyway.
I used to I listened when I traveled. That was when my thing, and now I don't even have that. So it's a little harder.
Back, I just canceled my TripIt Pro subscription this morning. They're like,
what?
Anything to do to make it so you can keep your subscription? And I'm like, no, I don't really think there's much you guys can do. But I'm like, you know, I hate to tell you guys that I'm actually enjoying not traveling. Yeah. I'm actually much more productive. And at any rate, the point is, where I was going with this, we do this thing on the show called Picks. And we like to let our listener or let our guests know we're doing this ahead of time after we sprung it as a surprise on a couple of our guests that it didn't exactly go that smoothly, and we had to do some editing of our content and had to figure out, like, we're editing a recording and take out some of the delays of them trying to figure out what they're going to talk about. I'm going to ask you, though, I gave you a heads up, gave you the way the rules work for this, which is pretty easy. Do you have a pick for us? I know you have a pick for us. Julie has a pick for us, so there goes the surprise. What is your pick for our listeners today?
Well, so my pick is like a plus and a negative. So okay. I'm going to pick CuriosityStream, which is a on-demand video service for documentaries. So it's a lot of documentaries. I don't really like TV. I don't watch a lot of television. I watch documentaries I'm a huge food person. Like I love to learn about cooking person, not really a food. I don't eat a ton, but I like to learn about cooking. I like to cook. That's like a big thing for me. And mm-hmm. to explore food of different areas. So I've always just watched food related shows. And I found this CuriosityStream documentary site through like a mailing or a web thing or whatever, advertisement. And I went there and I found some great new food ones, but just a lot of other cool documentaries, just really interesting ones. And I shared it with you. There's a couple of cool space ones that just popped up like really quick. There's hundreds really, but two of them that just popped up really quick. I was like, ooh, Andrew liked that. That's Andrew's up his alley. I like this. Yeah, I know. I really like it. It's not super expensive, which I also like. However, on the not so expensive, how did this happen? We had cable, and cable costs like $150 a month, and everybody's like, I'm cutting the cord. We're not going to do it anymore. We're going to pay $20 a month, and it's going to be so great. We're going to get all our content. And then it was like, oh, but I need Hulu, and I need Netflix, and I need Amazon mm-hmm. Prime, and God, I got to have HBO, and I got to have MTV, and Disney Plus, and I got to have and now we're back to like $250. How did this happen?
So I hear you. There is an aspect to it that is frustrating to me, where it is very hard to find one of these different platforms that gives you really just I just want the bare bones, right? Right. I don't want, like, I can get, I'm on the fence right now, and I'm not sure how I want to do this. I'm currently a YouTube TV subscriber right now, and I'm, you know, I guess, victim of the big, 30% price hike that they're doing, because, hey, we added, you know, 8 or 10 more channels. I'm like, you added 8 or 10 more channels that I have zero interest in.
Right.
And of all the channels there are right now, I only want to watch some of the network stuff to get access to news and stuff that I don't want to watch online. Well, I guess if you're doing cutting the cord and you're watching over the internet, you're still watching online. But like, I want to be able to watch like NBC, CBS and stuff. Like you, I don't watch much TV. I watch some network stuff in terms of like news. I watch live sports, which is usually on networks, which that's the part that's really got me stuck on not cutting YouTube TV, because while I can get a lot of stuff over the air with an over the air antenna on my TV, I still can't get some things where some of the sports I like certain auto racing, isn't on broadcast like network TV. And so it's on certain like restricted channels and stuff, and it's still a pain in the butt. But I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what we're going to be doing. But at least, if anything, I like the fact that the customer service side of it, if I wanted to get HBO for just 1 month so that I can watch that Michael Phelps documentary about the mental, like depression stuff that he dealt with.
Yes.
Yep. I can sign up for a month and I can watch it and then I can shut it right back down very easily without speaking to a human.
Yeah. That, you know what? That's valid because I will admit the one TV show I really wanted to watch because I have been a Patrick Stewart fan for my entire life. I love that guy. I think he's the most amazing actor. I loved him as Captain Picard, like loved him like Captain Picard, like, oh my God, he's the most amazing thing. So when Picard came out on CBS, I was like, I will be getting CBS just so that I can watch that show. And what's really funny is I got CBS to watch this. My husband could care less about science fiction, like period. He thinks it's the stupidest thing in the world. Like, hates it. We're the exact opposite of gender stereotype that you will ever find in any relationship. At any rate, hates sci-fi. So I'm trying to watch Picard and I'm like the second episode in and all I want is like quiet. I want to hear it like loud. You know, I want to like be into it. And it was so good. Like I'm two episodes in and I'm like having so much fun. And he's like standing next to me like, this is so stupid. Why are they doing that? Why is it so loud? I'm like, it's a battle scene. It's supposed to be loud. They're blowing stuff up. This is how it works. Yeah. Oh my God. So I've stopped. I'm not watching it. He and my son go away Labor Day weekend for 4 days to a father-son.
Oh, you got a binge weekend set up.
Oh, it's happening. I got the fettuccine Alfredo I'm making myself. I got the ribeye night. There will be champagne happening.
Holy moly.
Red wine. I have a whole menu planned for 4 nights. I've got my breakfast plate. Eggs Benedict is going to be happening. Like all the foods that I want to eat.
This is awesome.
That I get like shit on. Like, really? You're going to eat that? Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm going to eat this ribeye steak, the whole friggin' thing, and the little outside part with the fat on it. I'm going to eat that too. I'm going to eat it. Macaroni and cheese. That's going to happen. Anyway.
This is awesome.
Story short,
this is absolutely awesome.
Yes. To your point, like I like the fact that I can just say, yep, I'm going to buy CBS All Access for 1 month and then cut it because I don't watch anything on CBS. Like I don't need CBS All Access. I don't need it.
That's like me and Disney Plus. Like I haven't signed up for Disney Plus. And I was like, you're such a Star Wars fan and you haven't seen Mandalorian. I'm like, no. And actually I was about to sign up for it. And then I heard that season 2 may be coming soon. I don't know if they said they're going to do season 2 or if it's coming soon. But right. I was like, okay, when I don't have anything, then I'll go sign up for Disney Plus. I'll go binge out my Mandalorian season 1. If season 2 is around, I'll binge that one out and then I'll shut it down and I'll come back. And it's just, the kids want to be, I want to watch this. Okay. Oh, we'll turn it on for a month and then we'll turn it back off. And so you want to binge it? That's fine. It's like, I like the flexibility of this a little bit more. It's funny the way you describe the TV habits are very much like our house, except like you said, just genders are swapped. My wife and my son, they like watching stuff like Parks and Rec and stuff. And I'm just like, I was the guy that didn't care about.
Things are funny.
There's some stuff that I like, but it's like, I don't know. I give up, but. This is cool. I had not heard of Curiosity Stream. I'm gonna take a look at some of this. I tell you, you did a hell of a job pitching it with the two screenshots you sent me called Return to the Moon and one called Sailing to the Stars. It's like, okay, you got me.
I thought maybe I had you. And maybe you could just do a month because they do have a monthly subscription thing, which is kind of cool. And it's pretty cheap just for 1 month. You could be like, oh, I'd like to watch 2 or 3 documentaries, see if there's anything else. Man, not right now. I'll have a binge. You know, they have a lot of history stuff, which I also know you like history stuff quite a bit. They have lots and lots and lots of history stuff.
Here's one for you. So I like documentaries and I just finished watching one. My wife and I fell into it. That just came out on Amazon Prime last week. Thought about using this as my pick, but I'm going to use a different show that I watched just recently. It's called...
pulling a me now.
Yeah, it's
Mediator.
It's on Amazon Prime. It just came out in the middle of August, and I think it's called Eco Challenge. I think it's called the Eco Challenge.
I haven't heard of
it. It's an extreme adventure race.
Ooh.
So, and when I say extreme adventure race, I mean like... your team of 4 is dropped off on one side of Fiji. You will be kayaking across the open ocean. You will be diving into the ocean to get things out. You're going to be hiking up mountains, climbing up waterfalls, rappelling down waterfalls, swimming in 50-degree water, mountain biking, everything. And it's all done in Fiji over the course of about 10 days. And it's how fast can you do it? Some teams did it in like, I think like 5 or 6 days. Some teams got cut off at like the 11-day thing. You had, it's 60 some odd teams. There were at least 10 or 15 teams that got medevaced out.
Oh my God, that sounds fascinating.
It was great. It's really good. The story's good. And if you watch it, look for the team called, I think it's called AR Georgia. Mm-hmm. And there's the youngest competitor. It's a kid named Hunter. And they all wear red shirts. So I run with his mom. And I saw her talking about this on Facebook for a while. And
you were like, I gotta see this.
Sometime last year. Well, no, yeah. I didn't know that she's like crazy runner, right? She's like ultra marathons and does the hiking, the trail running and stuff. And I'm like, I'm a half marathoner, I'm half crazy. You're like fully like, you're insane, like catatonic crazy with the running that she does. So she talked about this extreme race stuff, and I was like, yeah, whatever, this isn't me. And I didn't pay attention to it. We fell across this last Thursday or Friday night, started watching 2 episodes a night, and it is awesome. It is absolutely awesome in how extreme it is. So
I need to find that.
Big recommendation.
On the ultra marathon thing though, not to like digress too much, there's one called Finding Traction, and you can just watch that. I think it's on Amazon, but it's about one of the oldest women to ever run the ultra marathon down the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah.
It's like 200 and something. Have you seen that one?
I don't think I've seen that one.
It's killer. She's trying to beat the men's record, and it's just, it's awesome. I'll send you a link.
Okay. I will send you a link to the one that I picked out, or the one that I just mentioned there. It's called The World's Toughest Race, Eco Challenge Fiji. And it came out I can't remember. It's season one, which means hopefully they're going to do more seasons. It came out on August the 14th. And they just dropped them all at once. And it's 10 episodes, about 50 minutes per. It's fantastic, though. But that's not what my pick is going to be this week. My pick is going to be something that was awesome. So I'm posting these links for you so you can see me. You didn't see this ahead of time. So right before this one, we watched another documentary. And it's a single 2-hour-ish documentary. A couple of weeks ago, my pick was Last Dance of the Chicago Bulls.
Yep.
So this one is all about the Beastie Boys. It's called Beastie Boys Story. And it's on Apple TV Plus. I loved Beastie Boys growing up. The two remaining members of the band, one of them passed away, but they, oh my God, it was laugh out loud funny. It was like at least 5 times I laughed at it. They did a book on their entire story. And then this was done as almost kind of like a presentation / book tour. And they recorded the last delivery of this show that they did. It was done in the theater, and a little bit of it's kind of scripted, or maybe the whole thing is scripted. It's awesome. It's absolutely awesome. I loved it.
Cool.
So it's a good one.
Fun. Good picks. Cool. That was awesome.
That was fun. I'm going to do, you know what? We're going to do something special here. This ultramarathon one, this will be a joint pick.
Oh, cool. It's a really awesome documentary. I've seen it twice. That's how much I liked it.
Wow. Cool. Julie, thanks a lot for joining me today. I'm really glad that we got to do this.
It was really great. If CJ's ever gone again, I'm back.
Oh, we will definitely bring you back. CJ may have to be gone for a little bit longer because this went really well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Sorry, CJ. Didn't mean to take your spot.
Cool. Take care, Julie.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find out about our show and grow the audience, and we would really appreciate it. If you got a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link to it so that we can play your question on the show. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, in the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You'll get notices of each new episode as well as the show notes sent directly to you each week. We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.